All right, you can be seated. So let's have a time of a little honesty. You know that I tend to be very honest before you, so I'm expecting it back. And I don't know how honest you are. This is a test. How many of you love control? Okay, those who didn't raise your hand, I know that you're not honest. I mean, we really have to admit, we as women, we love control. It's part of our makeup. I mean, you know, we used to watch Get Smart. I was always for control, never for chaos. I hate chaos. I absolutely hate chaos. I hate chaos in my kitchen. In fact, my one grandson, Ryder, we tend to nickname him Chaos because that's what he likes to do. In fact, he loves to say, I love chaos. He'll come into my family room, and I have these Velcro cushions on the couch, and he loves to take all those cushions off. It's like somehow he sees that couch, and he's like, this is my objective in life, you know, to bring chaos to grandma's room. I love my kitchen just totally organized. I love my drawers organized. My mom said to me one time, you know, before you move in, and when you're looking at a house, imagine that you're cooking a meal, and then that's where you place your pots, your pans, your, you know, and she said, and do a full meal. I remember looking at a house with her, and she says, okay, this is going to be a five-course dinner, Cheryl. Show me what you're going to do. And it was so fun because I'd be like, okay, the salad, and, you know, trying to figure out the dynamics. And then that's where I would put the silverware. I would imagine myself setting the table. My drawers, I love my drawers organized. I have a sweet cupboard and I have a savory cupboard. All right? The savory is anything that would go with a meat or spicy dish. Never is the savory to be mixed up with the sweets. The sweets are the sugar and the flour, the baking soda, everything for cookies, right? Everything for cakes over here. I don't know who it is in my family, but I've got my suspicions that keeps putting the honey in the savory cupboard. Just doesn't work that way for me. And sometimes they even move the ginger, so I really do know who they are. There's someone who likes curry. They will remain nameless, but I married them. But they just keep, you know, doing that. And I love organization. I really do love organization. It's not my specialty, but I still appreciate it and love it. But, you know, you just get your kitchen all organized. I don't know about you, but I go to bed with an organized kitchen. And I wake up and somebody's decided to make cookies like at 10:30 or 12 and leave the dishes for mom because they know she needs something to do in the morning. Or don't you hate this hidden laundry? I don't know about you, but do you do the whites together, the darks together, and the mediums together? And then you just finish the whites. Your whites take a little longer to collect, so you kind of wait on those. You know, the darks you have to do a little more often because black is so in. And the towels, you know, those kind of, you know, at least if you're single, it's a weekly thing. If you're married, it's a, you know, triple weekly thing. And if you've got kids, it's a daily thing, hourly thing. So you have to do these things, and then you just get the whites done, and there it is, that hidden white shirt that so needs your touch. And you're thinking, where were you when I was doing the whites? I looked for you, but I could not find you. How dare you hide from me? And you know, then you're just thinking, and I have a front-loading machine. It's not like you can, I used to be able to just lift it, throw it in, put it with the rest, but the front loader, you're just, it's like, no, you can't open me. Mm-hmm. Oh, let's go the other way. Vudump. Vudump. How many of you front loaders? You know how they just kind of tease you? Like, we're going to go this way for a while. And now we're going to go this way. And you can't come in. And you can't open that door. They're really taunting machines. I just want you to know if you're thinking about one, they taunt you. You can't just throw that white sock or that other thing in. You have to wait and wait. And wait. Or you close the door and you turn around and you go, oh, I didn't see that basket. And it's already going, too late, too late, too late. But you know, I love things in my control. One of my favorite times when my children were growing up was when they were all in their beds. You know, and I knew they were all asleep in their beds. It's like, yes, I'm in control. You know, they're in their beds, those four separate beds, and they're sleeping, and all is right with the world. But when that one gets to be a teenager, and they're out a little late, and you feel that loss of control, I hate that loss of control. I love to control my time. I love schedules. I write schedules for myself. In the back of every notebook that I have is a calendar, a homemade calendar. I make calendars in all of my journals. There's not a journal without a calendar. I have days circled. I have to remember retreats like ours and different things like that. So I have to circle the days. I have to remember birthdays. So every notebook has a calendar because I want to remember the dates. I want to remember the time. I don't want to forget. And I cross out days in the back of my journal because I like to be in control of my time. And I have daughters that want to make sure that I know that time is not my own. In fact, I think they believe that tardiness is a family quality. That's so hard for me. I was at every doctor's appointment 10 minutes early. I like that. I like to be in the office and they're like, oh, Mrs. Brodersen, you're not scheduled for another 10 minutes. I know, but I'm here. I'm going to just check the inventory of magazines, find out what's happening with people. But, you know, I just like that. But, you know, when time gets away from you, those unexpected things that start stealing your time away, and you know you're going to be late, oh, I hate the loss of control. I hate change so much that I like to be in the lane I need to be in at least 10 miles before I have to make my right turn. I don't even like changing lanes. I don't like having to look in that mirror. I don't like having to turn around and make sure nobody's sneaking up in my blind spot. Hate that blind spot. Or, you know, the other day I was on the freeway and my friend said, stop putting on your blinker. They know it and they speed up. Have you noticed that? The minute you put that indicator, like, excuse me, I want to move into the right lane. They're like, oh, no, you don't. Oh, no, you don't. Oh, no, you don't. One right after another. I don't know what it is with people on the 405, but they're not nice. But, you know, we hate it when things get out of control beyond what we can manage. We can't stop it. We can't thwart it. We cannot help it. We can't change it. These are the times of distress, aren't they? Times of distress are times where we've lost control. That's what's really happening. There's nothing we can do about it. It's out of our control. Distress comes in various packages. It can be a rebellious child. You can't change their heart. You can't reach them. Nothing you say, nothing you do is going to change their course. Nothing but prayer, right? Nothing physically that you can do is going to change. It could be a betraying friend. Today in leadership, one of the women was talking about her friend saw it one way and she saw it another way, and they just couldn't see each other's side. And that's what happens a lot with a betraying friend. They can become even irrational, that their set of truth is not truth. What they perceive is not really what happened or what you saw that happened. Have you ever thought, oh, if I can just make them see it this way? And so you bring a different, or you try to bring a better perspective, and they're like, that's not what happened. And they're even angry at you for trying to bring a different perspective. And there's this irrational, a betraying friend. It could be a cursing neighbor. Have you ever had someone get mad at you for no reason? I was at the market one time, and this man just rammed my cart. And I looked at him and I said, did I do something? And he looked at me and he went, and he rammed it again. And I said, sir, if I'm making you angry, tell me. And he just kept ramming it. Then his wife came and got him. I realized he had Alzheimer's, but still. Another time, all my adventures lately have been at the market. Just about 3 months ago, I'm at the market. And I'm in line, and there's like three people in front of me, and the line next to me opens up. I know these people. I go over to the other line, and this man rushes in front of me, and I back up my cart, and I said, go ahead. And he goes, of course I'm going ahead. It's my right to be here. You just coming over in front of everybody else. Who do you think you are? And I just looked at him, and I said, I don't think I'm anybody. It's all right. Go ahead. And he goes, of course, you people, I know your type. I said, all right. And he goes, I said, but look, you're in front and I'm just right here. He goes, but look at those other people. They're still in line. I said, but they didn't move over. That's because you just moved your cart. And I'm like, you know what? I'm really sorry. Yeah, sure you are. And I said, do you want me to move back to that line? He goes, oh, do whatever you want. You always do. I was like, and so I moved my cart to the other line. I stood behind those other two people. I said, you can move over there. And they're like, uh-uh. right, we'll just stay here. So we're all in this long line and nobody's getting in behind him. Finally, this guy comes up and he's standing like 6 feet away from this guy. And the guy's still glaring at me even as he walks out the door. I'm walking out the door going, I don't do whatever I want. I don't do whatever I want. That is not me. That will not define me. So I'm letting people cut in front of me going home. I'm like, I am a nice person. I am a nice person. It could be an unwanted or unpredicted move. You ever have that? Circumstances just change. You've got to move, or you know, these things come out that you just were so unexpected. It could be a job loss. You thought this is what you were going to be doing for the rest of your life. Everything seems secure, and then it's gone. It could be a sudden change in the environment, the atmosphere. Just the other day, you know, Brian is gone right now. Keep it to yourself. Right? And a dear friend of mine came up and said, oh, I heard there have been a lot of break-ins in your neighborhood lately. Yeah, I've got a broom holding my sliding glass door closed, you know. And then Brian wrote me and said, your daughter came over at 10 o'clock and said the front door was unlocked. What am I going to do with you? I don't know. You shouldn't leave me. That's all I have to say. Unexpected circumstances come into your life. You know, we can't change the atmosphere around us. You know, do you ever wonder what is happening to the people in the United States? Or you watch television and you think, what are these people thinking? This is the programming that is going into our children's minds that is changing the way they feel and their perspective about everything. You know, they're just showing their peers just having sexual relationships without love, without marriage, without protection, and they're treating it like it's the norm. So now the kids are thinking that they're not normal if they're not indulging in sex. And it's so sad. But this atmosphere that's changing around us, and you're thinking, wait, could this be the same place that I grew up in? Where things were safe, but there's this change. And sometimes you feel so powerless to change the atmosphere around you. I mean, I can't blow up Hollywood. Probably shouldn't. But I've had my my temptations. Or unexpected, as we said, circumstances coming in. Those things that just hit us from the right and the left. So unexpected. Sometimes we are the victim of circumstances. Sometimes they have nothing to do with us. We didn't choose this atmosphere. You know, we're not adding to it. It has just happened. It's just part of life. Sometimes it's someone else's bad decisions and they're affecting us, right? We didn't make this bad decision. Somebody else did, and it's a series of bad choices, like the economic crisis that we're going through and people that have chosen to indulge themselves at the expense of others. And it's beyond our control, but it's not our fault. We didn't cause it. It wasn't that dress that we bought last week on credit. But sometimes it is the repercussions of our own bad choices, and we're dealing with it. And all these things can cause distress. And sometimes we're tempted when we're having distress to think that God has abandoned us or that God is angry with us. And a temptation sometimes in our moments of distress is to pull away from God. Like, I brought this on myself. You probably want me to fix it myself. And then I'll come back to you. Have you ever tried to do that? Lord, I'll be back as soon as I fix it. I'll start reading my Bible again every day. As soon as I write my thoughts before you. As soon as I've repented. As soon as I've made atonement. As soon as I've gotten everything the way it should be. Then I'll come back and I'll start my devotions again. But you probably don't want to speak to me because of what I've done. You probably don't want to hear my voice praying and asking for help because of what I've done. And that tends to be our mindset often in distress. Maybe because we brought it on ourselves, but nothing, nothing could be further from the truth. Nothing. God wants us to seek his favor at all times. David said, seek the Lord's favor. Seek his favor evermore. And what we see in David's life is even in his distress, He sought the favor of the Lord. You see, the enemy wants to condemn us to the point that we stop seeking the favor of the Lord, that we try to fix the situation before we seek the favor of the Lord. And what happens when we try to fix it ourselves? It gets worse and worse, and we complicate things, and we find ourselves even sinning in order to atone for the sin we did. And sometimes it's even lying, thinking that's going to fix it, and it doesn't. We need to seek the favor of the Lord. David had distressing circumstances. His distress, in part, was due to his own sin and the trouble that he had brought into his own house. Some were the choices of others, sin, rebellion, bitterness, how they chose to react to those circumstances. David was not responsible for everything that was happening to him, but there was a part that he was responsible for. But another part of his distress were just the natural consequences of living in a world of fallen men. And that's where it is for us today. Some of our circumstances are due because of our bad choices, some due to the bad choices of others, and some simply because we live in a world of fallen men. But David sought the favor of the Lord. In 2 Samuel 15:25, David said, "If I find favor in the eyes of the Lord, he will bring me back and show me both it and his habitation." David realized that his return, his prosperity, did not depend on the favor of men. It did not depend on the favor of a captain of an army. It did not depend on the favor of a nation. It did not depend on the favor of a counselor or on the religious leaders of Israel, but his prosperity depended solely on the favor of the Lord. David had much to say in the Psalms about the favor of the Lord. In Psalm 5:12, David said, "For you, O Lord, will bless the righteous with favor. You will surround him as with a shield." In Psalm 30, verse 5, he said, "For his anger is but for a moment, but his favor is for life. Weeping may endure for a night, but joy comes in the morning." Psalm 30, verse 7, David said, "Lord, by your favor you have made my mountain stand strong." Psalm 119, verse 58, "I entreated your favor with my whole heart. Be merciful to me according to your word." You see, David understood that God's favor, even in distressing times, would surround him like a shield. David realized that even when he had sinned, if he repented, he had the favor of the Lord, because God's favor is for life. It never ends. It is absolutely constant. It never diminishes. David also realized that the favor of God strengthens and establishes someone. So he sought the favor of God with his whole heart. Distress can cause panic, doesn't it? When we're out of control, we can panic. And in our panic, we can make, as I said before, worse choices than we've made previously. Distress can often make us want to seek the favor of a ruler or a favor of somebody who seems to have power. In Proverbs 29:26, Solomon said, "Many seek the favor of the ruler, but justice comes from the Lord." But often in our distress, we're looking for that favor from a man, from somebody who's powerful. But we learn that the favor of man is always changing, isn't it? It is so interesting to me, the polls. You know, like, this person's ahead today and this person's way behind. Now they're even. Now this is ahead. Now this. I mean, it's so mercurial. Man's favor is constantly changing, and it's unbelievable. In fact, in Proverbs 31, it says, favor is deceitful, isn't it? It just is always changing. I remember, and for those of you from the 80s, you'll get this joke, but I remember a joke in the 80s that went, "What goes 10, 9, 8, 7, 6, 5, 4, 3, 2, 1? It's a mean joke, I'm warning you. And it was Bo Derek aging. It's mean, isn't it? But isn't it true about favor? I mean, in the 80s, she was gorgeous and she was all the rage. Then they found out she was a Republican. Distress can make us think that God is finished with us. We often judge God's feelings for us on the level or type of distress we're under or by our own shortcomings. And we don't realize that his favor is for life. I had such a living example of this. Writer, Mr. Chaos, was told not to go on Grandma and Grandpa's treadmill. We bought a treadmill for ourselves for Christmas from Craigslist. And we've got this treadmill, and we're going to use it any day now. But we told him, stay off the treadmill. Stay off of it. So pretty soon, I'm doing something, and I'm watching him, and I hear, Grandma, help! Grandma, help! I go in there. He's holding on for dear life. He's got it going like 70. And he's like, Grandma, Grandma. Now, I didn't stand there and go, well, you know what? You did this to yourself. You figure it out. You're 5 years old. You shouldn't have done this. Grandma told you no. I'll be in the kitchen making cookies for all the good boys. Are you kidding? I grabbed that little guy. I pulled him off that treadmill. I hit the stop button, which is my favorite button, and I just held him tight. And I said, see, Grandma saved you, but this is why Grandma said stay away from the treadmill. And he has. He's been very obedient ever since. So have I. I've stayed off of it too. But you know, my favor for that little guy, even when he's chaos, is for life. That's my grandson. Even when he embarrasses me, that's my grandson. Even when he disobeys me, that's my grandson. And when he calls out for help, you better believe Grandma's going to pull him out of that help any chance she gets. God's favor is for life. And he sees you in that distress because you got on the treadmill. You got on it and you pushed the button too fast. You thought you could handle more than you could. And now you're on there holding on for dear life going, help! And you know what God does? He comes and he delivers us. Why? Because his favor is for life. David sought God's favor. When he heard of the success of Absalom's rebellion, he did not seek to hold on to the throne and cause a civil war. He didn't say, well, let's take this to the people. Are you for me or are you for this rebellious son with the long hair? He didn't do that. In fact, he quietly left Jerusalem so a civil war would not come and destroy Jerusalem. He put himself entirely in the hands of the Lord. He didn't seek the favor of the throne or of the people. When Ittai, who was from the city of Gath, no doubt a Philistine, came with 200 soldiers and said, David, we're with you. We're going to ally ourselves with you. We're here to protect you. David did not seek the favor of foreigners. Like, well, could you go back to Gath and see if you could get anybody else to kind of join with you? Maybe we could gather an army from all the surrounding nations that actually like me and will come and we'll put this thing down. He didn't seek that favor. In fact, he said to Ittai, you know what? You go back. You go back and the Lord be with you. But Ittai, seeing the favor of God upon David, said, no, I'm with you. I want to stay with you. When Zadok came with the ark, and Abiathar came with the ark of God, David sent Abiathar and Zadok back to Jerusalem with the ark because David didn't seek the favor of religious icons. You know, it's interesting how when people get down in the polls, all of a sudden they're talking religiously or they're carrying their Bibles with them everywhere. Have you ever noticed that? I mean, there was a famous politician, and after 9/11, he was instrumental in getting prayer out of school. And he stood on the Pentagon steps, leading the Pentagon in God Bless America. You know, everybody gets religious in crisis, don't they? I mean, to me, it's absolutely amazing. But they use the Bible as a religious icon. They don't read it, they don't open it, they don't obey it, but man, they carry it around when they're in trouble. David said, I'm not going to use a religious icon. You take that back to Jerusalem so it can be for the people, because that's a sign of a covenant with God. I'm not to take that just for myself. And it can't give me victory. It is only the emblem of a covenant with God, but it's of the heart. When he found out about Ahithophel's betrayal, David gave the situation to God and he prayed. He didn't seek the favor of the best counselor. He sought God to remedy the situation. And we're told because he sought God, when he got to the top of the mountain, even in his distress, he worshiped. He worshiped. I think sometimes that when we talk about worship, we narrow worship simply to praising God, and even just singing. But I remember Elizabeth Elliot speaking at this very podium saying, worship is something you do with your life, not just your lips. And that is so true. But it says that Jairus, when he came seeking Jesus to heal his daughter, and he fell down before Jesus and said, Lord, come to my house. The Bible calls out worship. When the leper came before Jesus and fell before Jesus and asked for healing, the Bible calls that worship. When Mary broke the alabaster bottle and poured it out on Jesus, the Bible calls that worship. What am I saying? Worship is not only an activity, but worship is when we come to the Lord in need and with our needs, as well as when we come to praise the Lord. It's both. But God calls it worship when we look to him in our distress for help. God calls it worship when we ask him to take over our problems, when we give him control of our life. God calls that worship. God calls that a sweet-smelling sacrifice to him. That's worship, and that's what David did. And he sought the favor of the Lord. That is worship. When Shimei came against David, throwing rocks and stones and dust and accusations at David, David said, it may be that the Lord will look upon my affliction and that the Lord will repay with good his cursing this day. David sought the Lord's favor even in this. Maybe this will bring even more favor to me from God. He wanted God's favor so desperately that he was willing to put up with Shimei if it would bring God's favor and greater favor. Are you willing to put up with annoyances so you'll get greater favor from God? Have you ever thought of it that way? Maybe God will look upon this affliction, this thing I'm going through, and see how needy I am and reward me even more. Do you look at slander that way? Do you look at false accusation that way? Do you look at dirty, dusty days that way? David was desperate for the favor of God. David listened to the instruction of his soldiers, and he says, whatever seems best to you, I will do. He was so seeking the favor of God that he was willing to listen to the instruction of others. He wanted Joab to show mercy to Absalom because he was seeking the mercy of God. And after the victory over Absalom, David still sought the favor of God. That's why he was mourning over Absalom and couldn't go directly to the people, because he had to make sure he had God's favor. That was more important to him than the favor of the people in Israel. But God showed David his favor even in his distress. In my personal devotions, I'm in Nehemiah, which is kind of interesting because we were just there a couple years ago. But as I've been reviewing and looking through Nehemiah, there's a point in Nehemiah when Ezra and the priest begin to rehearse the history of Israel to those who have returned from captivity that are in Jerusalem. And they show them, beginning with God's creation and then going to Abraham, how God has been so faithful to Israel, even in Israel's infidelity. And I'm reading it and thinking, oh, those Israelites didn't realize how much God had done for them. Look at them, you know? And God says, why don't you take inventory of your life? And he said, What does this have to do with me? We're talking Israel right now. We're not talking Cheryl. We're talking Israel. And the Lord said, let's do a little inventory. And I began just to write out, starting at the very beginning of when God used to speak to me as a child. And as I began to take inventory of my life, you know what I saw? I saw that God's been with me, even in distress. I saw the faithfulness of God in every single situation. I saw his faithfulness as I took inventory of my life. And I had to just stop and say, you are absolutely faithful. You have never failed me. You've never neglected me. You have always come through. So why don't I trust you more? Then I was in Colossians and it talked about being vigilant in our prayers with thanksgiving. And I realized this element of thanksgiving in our prayers. You know why thanksgiving is such an essential to the Christian life? Not only does it build our faith, but it reminds us of the faithfulness of God. It reminds us of all those places where he... Just thought I'd make it really good. It reminds us of all those places God... Sorry, Tim. It reminds us of all those places that... He's got the headphones on. I could just see him going... Ah! They can cut that out later. But it reminds us of all those places God has been so faithful to us. You see, Thanksgiving is an inventory of our life, isn't it? It's showing us all those places where God has been so faithful. Okay, that was not in my notes, so I've got to find out where we are. All right. So God showed David his favor even in distress. As David is in this place, we see that God safely escorted David out of Jerusalem and across the Jordan. 21 miles as he is traveling to the Jordan, God is protecting him from any raids from Absalom. Now remember, Absalom, when he goes to battle, we're told that 20,000 men are killed in the forest. 20,000 men are lost. Imagine how great his army is. If he lost 20,000, and that's just the ones that died, and remember there are others that have to be wooed back to David. 20,000 men. And the worst David gets on this 21-mile journey is one little guy named Shimei who all he can do is throw dust and rocks. Not really hurt anyone, just an annoyance. Is that God? 21 miles. God sends Ittai and 200 other men who were affected by David's faith to stand with David during this time, who won't be derailed, who won't be deterred, and said, David, we're here. Now, these men come from Gath. They're a reminder of God's victory because Goliath came from Gath. But now look who God's bringing from Gath. A whole different element to remind David of God's faithfulness. Abiathar and Zadok, the priest, show their loyalty to David. David, we're with you. We love God too. And those who love God, who are seeking God's best for this nation, are with you. And then we see that God met David with provisions. And God confounded the counsel of Ahithophel. Ahithophel wisely counseled Absalom when to attack David. Ahithophel knew David's weaknesses. He knew all about the weaknesses of David's army, of David's men, of David's position. He knew that David was weak. He knew that he was disorganized. He knew that his forces were tired because they had had to move without more warning and had to journey 21 miles. He knew that they were vulnerable by the River Jordan. But God had sent Hushai, David's friend, to confound the counsel of Ahithophel according to David's prayer. And Hushai countered Ahithophel's wise counsel by appealing to Absalom's fears and vanity. And in the end, Ahithophel, who had become David's enemy, committed suicide. His counsel was absolutely defeated. God also allowed David to hear Absalom's plans and be able to prepare for what Ahithophel had planned. In fact, we're told that Hushai informed Zadok and Abiathar. Zadok and Abiathar told a servant woman. The servant woman told Ahimaaz, and Jonathan who started to run with the news to get it to David, but they were seen. They were seen by Absalom's men. But they ran and they hid in a well in Bahurim. Now, this is interesting that they would hide in this particular well in Bahurim, and the woman there in Bahurim would hide them in this well and cover it with grain, and those soldiers of Absalom would pass by it and not discover Jonathan and Ahimaaz. And the reason it's interesting is because Bahurim is the place that Shimei, the rock thrower, the dirt thrower upper, was from. I didn't sound very good, but that's all right. It's just a Bible study. But the idea is this, that, you know, you could think, oh, Shimei's against me, the whole city's against me. God was proving, even then, in this whole ordeal, there's some in Bahurim that are still for you, that are hiding men that can inform and help you. When David gets the news, David and his men travel 37 more miles, crossing the Jordan, going around the forest of Ephraim, settling in an area near Gilead. And we find how wisely God guided them to going beyond this forest. At the same time, when David gets to this place called Mahanaim, which he hadn't been before, and he's coming into this new fortress and this city, we find that he's met by Shobi. And Shobi or Shabi, however you want to say it, he's the brother of Hanun. Hanun had been the king of Ammon, and he had waged war with David at one point. And now here is Hanun's brother, who is befriending David. So God is giving David the favor of his former enemies. And he's coming with bed and basins and earthen vessels and wheat and barley and flour and parched grains and beans and lentils and honey and curds and sheep and cheese. See, God is bringing help and provision from unexpected places, from the people that you'd be most likely to expect it from. This is who God is bringing it to from. I'll never forget when we lived in Vista. My children had gotten lice in their hair. Isn't that just the worst? I used to be so prideful as a mother of my clean kids. And then God just really, you know, he puts you in your place. And I remember, you know, getting the call, having to pick my children up from school and being so like, oh, you know, do I even touch them? No offense, but that's it. And I remember Brian, of course, was gone. So I had to deal with it all myself. And I was pregnant with my third child and the other two, you know, had the lice. And I remember being at the market, backing up the cart and backing into a whole bunch of grocery carts. I just thinking, yes, of course, I went back into grocery carts, you know, and they dinged my car. And, you know, it's just one of those days. And I get home and the phone rings. And it's like, you know, those perfect women in your church, the ones who never want to know any of your weaknesses. Because they always look perfect. They always say the perfect thing. They went to the perfect college and they married the perfect man at the perfect time and had the perfect children that are all going to graduate from college and be like perfect professionals. You know those people? Well, she called. And she's like, Shara, heard your children have lice. And I'm thinking, great. And I was so expecting her to say, keep them away from my darlings. I really thought that was going to be the message. And she said, I know what it's like. Been there. Throw away your pillows. Love ya. I was like, I didn't expect that from her. Yeah, I really thought she'd say, you're out. Don't bother to meet us for lunch. We know what you are. We know what your house looks like. You know, instead, it was that counsel from unexpected places. I hope she never listens to this and knows she was that person in my life. But it was that counsel from an unexpected place that I just never expected her to be the voice of wisdom and comfort. Throw away the pillows. I did. Thank you. It's just God will do that in those places of distress just to show you I'm still with you, I'm favoring you. He will bring comfort from unexpected people and places. Next, you have Maker. And he is the one who watched over Mephibosheth When Mephibosheth was lame, he was living in his house, and David had sent to the house of Maker to bring Mephibosheth out. So here is somebody who says, I know that you're good, David. I know that you're good. God will bring someone that says, you help me, or I remember that righteous deed, and I know your heart, and I'm with you. And then there's Barzillai, this man who comes out of nowhere, who says, David, I want to just bless you. I've just come for blessing. You can't bless me back. I'm too old. But I've come to bless you. And then God showed his favor towards David by giving David a victory over Absalom. Absalom died a humiliating death. 20,000 of his men died in the forest. And some Jewish versions testify that they died from wild animals in the forest. Others say it was the forest itself that devoured more soldiers than David's forces. But we know that God fought against Absalom. God fought for David. And though Absalom built a monument for himself, he was buried in an undisclosed pit in the forest and covered by rocks. And God restored the favor of Israel and Judah to David. God did favor David and return him to the throne. And all that David had lost was recovered. God was willing to give to God. God favored David. When we understand the power of God's favor upon us, we can worship even in our distress. We can still come to God. We won't put down our Bible. We won't shun prayer. We will embrace it more than ever when we understand that God's favor is for life. Weeping may endure for a night. We might have some things to go through, but God is still with us. God is still going to see us. And when we understand that, we can worship. We can know and be assured in our distress that God hears our prayers, even as God heard the prayer concerning Ahithophel and brought Hushai to David. God will hear and answer our prayers in amazing and unexpected ways. When we understand the power of God's favor upon us, we will not try to hold on to our possessions or our positions, but we will release them into God's safe keeping. When we understand God's favor upon us, and that's the favor we're seeking, we will not try to avenge ourselves. Things will become annoyances, not obstacles. We will be unaffected by cursing. We will look at those times and say, maybe God will see this and use it as a blessing in my life. When we seek God's favor first, God will bring the counsel against us to nothing. We don't even have to know what's being counseled against us. We just need to know we serve the God who brings the counsel to nothing. When we seek the favor of God, he will direct our paths and put the forest of Ephraim between us and our enemy. And when we seek the favor of God, he will fill our lives with loyal friends. And as David could look back and say, those that God favors, he will surround as with a shield. And that's what you see, this impenetrable force field around David, because he sought the favor of the Lord and he was surrounded by the favor of the Lord, even in his distress, even in the consequences of some of his actions. He was still surrounded, delivered, provided for by the favor of the Lord. Are you in distress? Did you cause some of it? I don't know about you, but I was the youngest child. If anything happened in the house, I was to blame. And the problem was, I usually was. You know how it is? Sometimes the enemy starts accusing you and you're going, oh, yeah, I did do that. I did say that. Yeah, that was a stupid thing. Oh, yeah. I don't know about you, but when the enemy comes at me, he's usually right with most of the accusations. It's his application that's wrong. So, no, just give up. Really? Because I'm responsible for what I've done. But you know what? That's not the word of the Lord. The word of the Lord to us is even when we're in distress, even when we can see our responsibility in these things or where we've had a part in it, God is still going to work. He's still going to pick you up and get you off the treadmill of life. He is still going to save you. You're still in his favor. God's anger is for a moment. He will chasten you. But his favor is for life. Are things going well for you? Great. You're one out of the rest of us. Keep seeking the favor of God. Keep seeking his favor. As David said, seek the favor of the Lord evermore. Because it's God's favor that counts, God's favor that we want. At the end of the day, when we get to heaven, it's not the favor of man that will count. When we get to heaven, it's not the favor of the culture that will matter. It's not the favor of our times that will matter. When we get to heaven, there is one voice that matters. There is one thing we want to hear. And it's the voice that says, "Well done, my good and faithful servant. Enter into the joy of your Lord." That's the favor that is forever. Let's pray. Lord, we want to thank you that we can right now have your favor. Oh, Lord, it's as easy as seeking your favor. It's as easy as throwing up our arms to you and saying, "Lord, I want your favor. I want you to look upon me and be favorable to me. I want your will. I want your goodness. I want your eyes looking upon me. Lord, I want you to be pleased with my life, and I want to seek what you want. Lord, I want your will done on earth, even as it is in heaven. I want your will done in my life, even as it is done in heaven. Lord, as we seek your favor, Lord, you will deliver us, Lord. I pray that you would show us, Lord, how to seek your favor, how to walk in your favor, Lord, that we might be well-pleasing in your eyes. Oh, Lord, let the favor of men, let the favor of the culture, let the favor of everything else fade away. And let your favor be the utmost. Let it be the delight. Let it be the pursuit of our lives. Lord, that we might be blessed, that we might be delivered. Lord, that we might have you say, "Well done." We ask these things in Jesus' name. Amen.